Paul loves to say, if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love somebody else? Meaning self-acceptance is key to having a life full of happiness and love. That's easy for you to say when you're supermodel of the world, but for us mere mortals, it's hard to tell your inner saboteur to sashay away.
Today we're taking a look at the juicy complexities of self-acceptance. Joining us is writer Derek Clifton, who writes about culture and politics for NBC News and Vox.com. Derek has a lot to say about self-love and is currently putting the finishing touches on his new book, Heartwork.
Join us for this and all the hot news. Amanda Lepore unleashes her new album on the world.
Sex and the City's Cynthia Nixon is running for governor of New York State.
RuPaul tackles the controversial ending to All Stars 3.
And Lindsay Lohan is now the spokesperson for Lawyers.com.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Brrr. Today's show is all about love, not just the love you give to others, but the ones that you give to yourself.
Ooh.
Mm. Our guest today, joining us today, is writer Derek Clifton. Sorry. Joining us today is writer Derek Clifton, who writes about culture and politics for NBC News and Vox.com. Derek's got a lot to say on the complexities of self-acceptance, and he's currently putting the finishing touches on his new book, Heart Work. Welcome back to Feast of Fun, Derek.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Derek, glad to have you. It's been a while.
I know. It's y'all's fault, though.
I said, if you have any ideas, come on the show.
Okay, well, I miss you all.
And I was just like, you said you were leaving town, so I was just like, did you come up with any ideas? Get back on the show before you leave, please.
He did say that. It's a strong possibility. I'll be back to the East Coast for me. I've been back in Chicago for 2 years now, and it's been great, though some possibilities are emerging to take me out of the city and change, you know, some of... Shall I repeat that with the sound effect?
No, it's fine. I'm sorry. I was moving the microphone closer to your mouth.
Oh, okay. No, thanks. Let me
scoot Derek.
Up. Go ahead.
Do you consider yourself a happy person?
That is an interesting question.
And a loaded one.
Do I consider myself a happy person?
Because you've heard about my aspiration in life. Studies, right? And they usually say, like, people in remote villages and far corners of the world are happier because they don't have, like, you know, advertising thrown at them. And
the
Buddhists will tell you,
society
say that the single biggest cause of misery in the in humanity is desire. And so, if you want to overcome pain and suffering, you overcome desire. But I'm like, honey, if I'm miserable because I want to eat something or have a drink, I want to go get that drink or eat, you know, get some shelter or take that thorn out of my foot. It's not necessarily, you know, not giving up the desire to find that solution.
Yeah, you know, and I think what they mean to say with this, and this is something I've had to think through myself, you know, constantly being knocked down while often working really hard, winning at things and being shut out still as a queer person of color. I've had to learn to appreciate the present and the journey and not be so wed to an outcome on everything in my life. So I think when they're saying overcome desire, to overcome suffering, what they're saying is overcome your attachment to certain things, people, places, because guess what? Change is a constant. And if we're not changing, we're not evolving, and we're going to turn into pillars of salt. We're just going to be stuck there. Pillars.
That's very biblical of you.
I mean, I am the child of a minister and a gospel singer and, you know, a grandfather that was a pastor and an uncle's, you know, I'm a religious person.
What's the parable of Lot's wife? Why was she not supposed to look back, and why was she turned into a pillar of salt?
because they were being rescued by an angel from a city that was not welcoming to them as strangers, I believe it was. And you had that. That's where they say
Sodom
the whole
and Gomorrah.
Sodom and Gomorrah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this, and of course they use that story to justify homophobia and God's hatred of gays, which we know that's some bullshit.
And but, incest, right?
Yes.
Like Lot escaped with his wife and kids, but his wife turned back because she disobeyed God, so therefore she was punished. And then yeah. he went off to live in a cave with his daughters, who he proceeded to fuck.
And
but,
then they
but
had
the meaning of looking back babies. On the salt. Why? Yeah. Why is looking back on the past punishable by turning you into salt in the Bible?
Well, I think a lot of the earlier part of the Bible, mm-hmm. a lot of the things that are described, just me personally, I think some of them are real and some of them are like parable type, simile type stories, so that you can kind of understand the spiritual nature of it. Mm-hmm. So with the pillar of salt, it's like you go from being this human fluid, you know, bones, melanin, skin, blood, hair, beauty, and you're moving on, you're looking toward the light, you're going in a new direction. So if you're looking back, you're focused on the past and all the horrible stuff so much that you're not looking towards the promise of a future for yourself, that maybe you don't see it all the way clear yet, but it's coming. Mm-hmm. And she looked back. That means she didn't have the hope completely that something was in front of her was going to be better. And she started to long for what was. So she was in so much shit, as Jennifer Lewis likes to say, that she didn't get up from there. So she got stuck mm-hmm. and turned to what a gargoyle.
What did Jennifer Lewis say about shit? You sit in it so long, it starts, the smell is just normal or something
it
like that?
It starts not to smell anymore. Yeah. So you got to get the hell up from there.
Mm-hmm. How does Jennifer Lewis know that effect? Mm-hmm. Is that because somebody farts in the room too much and you stop smelling the
she
farts?
She did live with Shangela. Maybe.
I love that YouTube series with them, though. Yeah. When they were, like, together yeah. in the house.
That's magic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's great to see, you know, mentorship and love mm-hmm. and people taking care of each other. And, you know, I think when RuPaul, one of their major catchphrases, you know, RuPaul just got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Mm-hmm. And Jane Fonda, her longtime best friend. I didn't. Right. Who knew they were best friends, right?
Right.
Said, you know, I really love this man, and he means a lot to me. And RuPaul ended the whole ceremony by asking the audience to say, if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love somebody else? Can I get an amen? Everybody said amen, and mm-hmm. and then he went back to, you know, rollerblading.
Well, you know, you got to love yourself, and if loving yourself involves rollerblading,
but it's an easy thing to say, to throw out there, mm-hmm. and you know, on Cooking with Drag Queens, we sort of borrow that idea and say, cooking for yourself, mm-hmm. feeding yourself, and learning how to cook at home is really instrumental in having a deep, meaningful life and relationship to other people.
Well, it's about self care. Yes. Right?
Sure.
It's about
self-care,
yeah.
But it's easy to say.
Yeah.
It's easy for all of us to sit here on our asses into the microphone and be like, yeah, go love yourself. Yeah, cook for yourself. And the person who's starving, who's feeling lonely, is like, gee, fuck you, Fausto.
Like, where do I start?
Like, I don't, you know, and fuck you, Derek, fuck you, Mark.
And that's the thing, right? Sometimes, you know, I've had to forgive people in my life who are close to me and they say they love me, but then they don't know how to treat me despite how I teach them how to treat me. But then I realize in certain cases, the more I'm around them, when they are themselves and they're not hurting me, and I look at them in their lives and I'm like, wow, the reason why they're behaving this way isn't because of something I'm doing, mm-hmm. and it is because they're a bad person necessarily, but because they don't have the tools to know how to treat themselves. So how could they, in certain cases, like with boundaries or knowing when to stop arguing or knowing when to stop, you know, picking apart someone else's flaws and putting them down and comparing them to people, they don't do that for themselves. So how can they do it for somebody else? Which it gets back to that point, right? If you don't love yourself, how are you going to love somebody else? But that's where I think we don't say love yourself and mm-hmm. preach it. We say, let me help you mm-hmm. learn.
Yeah.
That's what therapy is for. That's what a spiritual counselor is for. That's what, in my case, sometimes good friends have been for. And I've used all three. But that's not about just self-care in isolation. It's also about self-love and community care. Because none of us can do it alone. We're human. We're social species. Shit. Even we didn't have the internet, queer people trying to find ways to fuck each other. So, hey, we need connection in order to survive and to learn about ourselves. So
one of the steps those self-help blogs say is overcome negative beliefs about yourself. which is that inner voice going, you know,
your inner saboteur.
Is it? Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know? Is it, don't you? You're,
they're gonna, shadow beliefs.
They're all so gonna precise. Laugh at you.
Mm-hmm.
Plug it up.
Well, you know, some of those things are there for they're there for a reason. They're there to stop you from doing stupid ass shit, right? That's gonna embarrass you, humiliate you, maybe even get you killed. But then on the other side, you have to figure, like, how far is this just like a negative belief based on anything?
Avoid perfectionism. And certainly we're great experts at this. We throw spaghetti on the wall and see what sticks. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just better get the job done than to wait for the perfect to be mm-hmm. the enemy of the, what is the expression?
Perfect is the enemy of the, don't make perfect the enemy of the good.
Mm-hmm. The enemy of good. Yeah. Sometimes you're just getting the food dip cooked, even though you don't have the right recipe mm-hmm. or the right spices or anything, at least you're getting dinner on the table.
Well, and procrastination and perfectionism are kind of along the same lines, because a lot of people, like, they procrastinate on stuff because they want it to be perfect, but they know if they wait to the last minute, it's not going to be perfect, and that's okay because they waited till the last minute.
And, you know, I did that all the time with papers in college. Yeah. I mean, who didn't? But, you know, even, you know, as a professional writer, you know, sometimes procrastination can get in the way, and editors may be able to think you're not even make deadlines when you're actually really being thoughtful about what you want to write and intentional. But in some cases, and I can say this about myself because I was this way very early in my career, I did not trust that I would have people reviewing my work who were as versed as me I am on intersectionality or cross-cultural collaboration, how social justice and politics and pop culture connect to form revolution and change in people. So I often had to really defend my ideas and write clearly so they couldn't edit out my voice or the meaning. Mm-hmm. But it would maybe take longer, and I would be taking forever to get my work done.
Mm-hmm. You feel like when you're writing an article that you're running into this situation pretty often, that the editor's going to edit the article to have you say the opposite that you meant?
Exactly. And that's happened a few times. I've had to go back and have it be changed. Or the headline mentions queer men. Queer men like me are the victims of sexual harassment that one talks about. That was one of my first pieces for The Guardian in late 2015. And I was very explicit with one particular editor who's not there anymore that I identify as non-binary, and I want to be inclusive of gender identities that were, excuse me, like gay desiring or queer, you know, open to same gender type love. But I didn't want to make it about queer men because oftentimes the people who I knew who were subject to that shit, I mean, people of all queer gender identities, but mostly femmes.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And I had to kind of, or people who are who are perceived to have femme characteristics, like the story I told in that article about how, like, these guys were, like, catcalling me on the street in, like, Lakeview because they liked my ass. I was, like, walking home from the gym, and, hey, I squatted, and I did sprinting, shot put, and I eat soul food, so I have a big ass. So I was hearing, you know, how these guys, these shout, no, I want to plow those tasty cakes, blah, 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 glaze them, all this
Did
other
these
shit.
Did people know you?
And no, they didn't know me. I was just walking down the street eating a Subway after the gym. Like, I was sweaty as shit and, like, listening to my music and just trying to, like, enjoy my, like, post-workout water and, you know, 6-inch, $2 sub of the day. And I'm hearing these guys be
these,
like,
6 inches?
I don't know
about the subs.
I don't know about that 6-inch life, but I'm joking. But no, like, I was, and they were following me home. I didn't know if they were just walking in the same direction or if they were, like, actually following me. So I went in, like, rushed in my house. They were laughing. I was running away from them. But I went in hyperventilating and thought, wow, this is what some women must feel like when they walk down the street every single day. Mm-hmm. But I'm a queer person and I'm male, you know, I was born with a penis. So say what that you will. But I'm like, I'm not the archetype of the typical sexual harassment, you know,
but
person
it can
who receives
to
it.
Anyone.
But it can happen to anyone. And if we don't talk about it that way, then we're going to think, oh, especially as queer men, I don't have to have any bodily boundaries or standards about consent because I'm gay and we're all sexually liberated mm-hmm. and stuff. So I shouldn't have a problem if somebody wants to touch my crotch and I don't know them. It's like, no, maybe you should. If that's not what you want, if your boundaries are a little bit more, you know, not as relaxed, then you should be able to say no. Or, hey, can you not talk about my ass like that to me? I don't know you like that. You know what I mean? We should be able to say that.
But that's definitely a very extreme example. But I think, like I always tell people, good fences make good neighbors. And sometimes just giving people just a little bit of information and saying, you know, this is not where I'm comfortable, creates a healthier relationship. You know, and just like, you know, some people love it when you burp in their ear and other people are really mad about that, you know? And so just sort of like talk, I think communication is a good way with coworkers, with people in your community. And, you know, if somebody cat calls me, I just put down my groceries and go, what? It's well, like, you're the dog that caught the car. Now what are you going to do with it? But it's not easy, you know?
It's best to ignore that kind of stuff.
You think so?
Yeah.
You don't know what kind of crazy shit.
You don't know what's going to happen.
Exactly. Like, if you shout back, and this is one of the things I report about often when I was working at Mike.com, and, you know, we helped build their identity section to become one of the most read, you know, around, like, feminism, gender, race issues, you know, on the internet when it was in its heyday. And we often covered sexual harassment, catcalling, manspreading, things like that. But the reality is, if women speak back, in some cases, they're not always protected because these men are like, oh, bitch, don't you tell... I'm just trying to tell you you're pretty. You know, she's like, I'm just trying to go to work.
Yeah, it escalates.
And it escalates. And people don't... Often don't... Bystander intervention doesn't always happen because people don't realize that a woman's safety may be threatened because some guy feels his masculinity and sense of domination has been threatened by somebody who is saying, I don't want what you're trying to offer me, please go away. So that's why Feminista Jones, who is a prolific writer and a black feminist tweeter and theorist, she started the hashtag You Okay Sis, along with other black feminists. I believe it was Feminista Jones. I could be wrong, but, you know, to say, hey, people, intervene. Say, hey, you all right? And she may say, no, this guy's following me. And then you have a witness. So I had to do something like that at a local bar here on Sunday where there's this like suburban white dude who I was waiting on a drink and he's just behind me, like rubbing, he rubbed my ass when somebody walked by and said, turned around and said, he's like saying, oh, you have a nice hat, thanks. I'm pretty sure somebody just rubbed on my ass. I was like, I'm pretty sure somebody just rubbed on my ass. So like, what was that? He's like, oh, I'm sorry. I just brushed. I said, thanks. Give me a little bit of space. And then he's like, oh, but you have such a nice hat. And he's like trying to touch my hat and like my shoulders. Said, thanks. Yeah, I think you can admire my hat from a distance. Like he wasn't getting it.
You're like, hands off, buddy.
Like, get
people
back.
Get
and I had to tell the bartender.
So aggressive when they're drunk, yes. But not when they're stoned. You know what I mean?
Did you say something to the bartender?
I did after, because the third time the guy, you know, I was trying to get to my friends. I had to walk past him and it was a narrow space. And he was looking at me all like with like these like creepy, like pervert eyes.
Oh, he
like
wanted you.
He was like, and I was just like, hi, let me get through. Excuse me. And he was trying to like block me so I could brush against him. I said, hey, look, I was really nice to you before, but I have to tell you now, this is not OK. I'm not interested in you. I don't want you touching me. Can you please move? And he says, you know what? You get out the bar. And I'm like, I'm not going anywhere. I said, let me tell you something. Don't let this proper English stuff fool you. I'm like, I am from the South Side. I will fuck you up.
Summers.
I am from Chicago.
I will whoop your
motherfucking ass. And then there's a bartender who I had to just say, because I didn't want to be looked at like the angry black person with this white dude who's like tall and like looks like Quasimodo who can't take no for an answer. So I said, hey, you know, I'm not okay right now. This is happening. He's like, oh, I've seen him before. He's a bit of a problem. Let me go get the manager so we can give him a little tweak band so he can get his mind right. And the bartender told me, guys use me all the time at the bar. They assume because I'm wearing a tank means they can just touch my biceps. I'm trying to just work and have drinks. You can just tell me I have a nice body. That doesn't mean you have to reach out and touch me all the time. Like, you know what I mean? You start to feel like a petting zoo and not as a person who has their own body. And you know what I mean? I'm not like stuffy about it. Like if I'm in a certain environment and there's a vibe and our shirts are off and shit like that, and someone touches my ass, I'm not gonna give a shit. But if I'm just out for drinks with friends and we're just having a conversation, I'm not in a place where I want that. And if I say no, I say no.
Environment, you know, and it's like it's, you know, a little brush in a gay bar is one thing, but it's like if it's continual and it's unwanted, it's like it's harassment.
Yeah. Let me throw this idea your way. Okay. Sometimes we can be the bad guys when we're trying to help somebody love themselves. Because the motivation for someone who's sexually harassing you, when they interview the people who do the cat calls, they always say, oh, I was just doing that because I thought it would lift her self-esteem. I thought that she wants to hear that. And sometimes when we are sending out information and advice to people to, you know, hopefully encourage them to fearlessly love themselves, we run the risk of being those people, the same people that harass someone.
How so?
Based on this assumption.
Because we're getting unwanted advice?
Exactly.
Yes.
Think about that. Let that sink in. Let that sink in. By even us doing this podcast and taking this approach, and I really want to be clear, it's like, if this rings a bell, this resonates with you, awesome. But maybe, you know what? You're fine just the way you are.
Yeah.
And you don't need some bullshit podcast out here, you know, telling you what to do with your life. It's like,
I think it's never bad to ask people to be reflective of their life, though.
Yeah.
To think about what's going on and think about the beliefs that they do hold. Because, like, listen, you know, you can be a very liberal person, you can be very open-minded, and sometimes, you know, you can hold on to these beliefs that are just, you know, backwards. Like RuPaul, you know, she calls, you know, her friend Michelle Visage says she's the most evolved person I know, and she's done a lot of self-help, she's done a lot of work to become the person she is today, but yet she can still hold on to like a backwards opinion about trans women and drag.
And you know something, I think, you know, Fawcett, to your point, we can become the bullies if we're not careful.
Because with the best of intentions.
With the best of intentions, sure. And I mean, and I think that's what happens when people go to extremes, right? Like, you have bullies who are like the femme Trump who just lost in Illinois last night by 5 points, Jeannie Ives, who was running for governor and was running, you know, anti-pussy hat, build the wall, you know, shouldn't have approved gay marriage, all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's well-meaning, supposedly, but from a conservative standpoint, that is just really hurting and undermining people's free will and their freedoms to live their lives, and she wants to prescribe her values onto them and her quote-unquote middle-class family matters values on people. And you have that end of the spectrum, and then you have the other side of the spectrum, and I don't want to call them social justice warriors, because I think social justice warrior, hashtag reclaim that term, because it's good to be a social justice warrior. However, it's not okay to be a social justice tyrant and hypocrite and expect perfection out of everybody on every single thing, social justice, because we're not in a perfect world. We're not living in heaven, but we don't have any heaven or hell to put nobody in. So that's why I say do no harm. Or is a shirt going around that's like a feminist t-shirt store that's promoting a lot on Instagram. Do no harm, but take no shit.
Hold on. I want you loaded so much. So be a social justice warrior, not a social justice hypocrite
or tyrant.
Yes. I love that. That's, put that on a bumper sticker, honey. Put that on a t-shirt. So you're working on this book, Heartwork, and, you know, is there any relationship to your past as a debate coach in a high school? It was a Evanston Township High School, a school that's rumored to inspire the film Mean Girls.
Yeah, so
even though Mean Girls was supposed to take place in New Trier, your school was the one that inspired it.
Yeah,
I mean
to Tina Fey. Mm-hmm.
I mean, Tina the school Fey was writing. Renamed North Shore High School, and the movie, it wasn't called New Trier or anything, or Evanston Township. But I think the rumor is that the North Shore High School culture, like the Glenbrook North and Souths, and we were talking about the North Shore in Chicago. We're, you know, in Chicago right now. So all the schools are like in the area of like Northwestern, like the Baha'i Temple, mm-hmm. a lot of like upper, like middle class to like rich, wealthy lakeshore neighborhoods in the suburbs of Chicago, where it's quieter, you have more space. You have lakefront real estate properties and beaches that are private. It's mm-hmm. beautiful. I loved it when I lived up there. However, you know, for me, debate was in high school, and I debated for the state's top magnet high school and was one of the founding captains of the debate team, you know, from the first few years. And it was where I learned to advocate for myself. I was in a community of like really diverse people. There was like at one point, my debate partner was an Asian American feminist. From school, we compete with other schools. Mm-hmm. Another partner of mine was a black guy who was on the football team with me very briefly before we left football, and others of us left track and field, like sprinting, distance, throwing and stuff, because we love talking about issues, our communities, race, bell hooks, Kimberly Crenshaw, Judith Butler, you know, queer theory type stuff, you know, what was going on with same-sex marriage. Like, we got to be real, hang out in communities and kind of be hippies. And then, you know, I learned how to teach kids in college, you know, while I was in college, how to do that for themselves and how that's going to help them write better papers, be better thinkers, be better citizens. Maybe run for office mm-hmm. one day, start a business. But more importantly, connect with people mm-hmm. by thinking clearly and being able to talk about what you care about without feeling like you have to bludgeon somebody over the head. But the biggest thing is adapting to your audience and knowing who you're speaking mm-hmm. to. And maybe the fact is your message can say the same, but you can say different things to get to the point.
So that's the key to becoming a master debater.
Master debater. We always made that joke. There were t-shirts that said master and then had parentheses around D. Bater. I wore that shirt when I was like 18. I'm not going to lie. I was
so
corny as
so
shit.
So helping kids in the school that inspired Mean Girls, what were some of the challenges that you faced there? I mean, because Mean Girls,
a limited
the movie
scope of ideas? Or?
Was the Burn Book. Yeah. The premise of Mean Girls is that there was these girls were really manipulative with each other. Mm-hmm. And Lindsay Lohan comes into the school and throws a wrench into the social structure. And so was that sort of your experience of working in that school?
I mean, I'll say this, you know, the kids I had on the team came from different family backgrounds. You had kids who were immigrants from, you know, Caribbean countries. You had kids who were of color, but came from, you know, wealth. You had kids of professors at mm-hmm. the school I taught at or I was studying at. Mm-hmm. You know, I was at Northwestern for undergrad and grad school. You had a mix of people in there. It was a very colorful team, you know, diversity wise. And my high school team was the same way, but we were a high school, you know, the public school system. But what made it interesting was that you had all these kids coming from different places in their lives and different cultures and stuff. And we're all talking about like real world issues around like access to transportation, around things like issues like searches and seizures with the police, around like foreign policy with China, and really bringing in a lot of our attitudes, our cultural biases to the table, and being able to talk about how you construct arguments and how you think through what's going on in the news, what you see with current events, what the president is saying, what key senators are saying, mm-hmm. what could possibly happen. And basically the whole point of the exercise is how do you build a world around an idea? How do you get it to action? How do you weed out all the bullshit arguments that get in the way? And also, big thing with our team was, how do you critique culture and society and mess up systems like racism and how they affect policies and how you can build something that may seem like it's going to be helpful, like a highway, and use it to segregate people like they did in Chicago back mm-hmm. in the day. So, you know what I mean? So we get people to think like that, and doing that in that school, it really took all these kids from different places in life and made them feel like they were all connected to each other. And that's what I loved about the community. And I left it on a high note. So I was happy.
I am surprised that Trump isn't trying to build a highway on the border instead of a wall on the border of Mexico. Because that's what a lot of highways traditionally have been used in major urban cities as a way to sort of divide people. You know,
certainly in Chicago, when they built the highway, it divided several black neighborhoods, right?
And in Austin, Texas, I-35 famously divided the east and the west side mm-hmm. of town. And you know, it was only until that past decade that the east side of Austin, Texas was mm. redeveloped into a major. Now it's, you know, hot real estate.
And oh,
it's
yeah.
driving everybody out of the that can't afford to live there on the east
well,
side.
Well, you know, my heart goes out to the city of Austin, too, with all yeah. those package bombings and stuff. And I guess the guy who did it, you know, he died.
He killed himself yeah, he in killed the car with his own bomb.
With his own bomb, yeah. And so he's had a history of being very. He was a conservative and very anti-gay, and has written stuff like saying how like you know a man should only be with a woman and you know, all that kind of garbage. So
well, and I always deeply believe that it's important for us to understand how happiness is mm-hmm. manifested, because at the core, a lot of these Trump supporters are very unhappy people.
Mm. They're and unhappy and they're not getting laid.
They're not getting the sex that they want.
They're not even getting hugs, I don't think.
I mean, did you all see that article from, like, I think it was Politico Magazine or the New York Times, where they were like, conservative men have been getting, like, blue balls since, or not getting laid since Trump was elected? I think I wrote on Facebook, if you didn't vote red, you wouldn't have blue balls. And it was a picture, they had the picture, like the teaser art on, like, social media, that the package that went along with the headline with these pictures of all these, like, little, like white fraternity looking guys wearing, you know, Make America Great Again hats, wearing suits with, and like yelling out, screaming like, yeah, but they look like they were like crying little boys who mm-hmm. need to be cleaned up and spanked. So God
do you
knows.
Do you want to do the spanking?
I mean, if he's cute and he's kind of like, you know, closeted gay Republican, and, you know, I may spank, and also at the same time, kind of like, well, how about this? Have you all heard of Mistress Velvet?
Oh, is she the
one
black
who teaches intersectionality and black feminism to, you know, the people who are like, who she dominates?
She's kind of famous because they've written some articles about her. So she's a dominatrix, and, you know, her client, she's black, and she makes her clientele read black feminist theory before she'll see them. So it's like she'll like probably whip on you, she'll probably spank you or humiliate you and do all that kind of stuff, but she wants to make sure that you're down with black feminism.
If you don't know how to spell Bell Hook's name without the capital letters, you're not going to get your dick sucked.
But, you know, it takes all kinds to make the world happen.
I still don't know why Bell Hooks spells her name with all lowercase letters.
It's a critique of capitalism and patriarchy imbued in that.
How the hell is that?
It's a linguistics argument tied to feminist
intersectional
theory.
So it's saying that capital letters is patriarchy?
And capitalism. Don't you get it?
Capitalism, patriarchy.
That seems silly.
It's also an elevation. Mm-hmm. I've heard this argument in various forms, and I think there's nuances in all of them, so I'm not like endorsing them necessarily, but I'm just saying what I've heard is that also all lowercase spelling is a lot less centering of one above others. And capital letters, you know, they say are more phallic, so, you know, just given the font and typography design, they're a little bit more stilted and stick up more than the others. So something that's kind of flat, you know, font wise, you know, and that's not capitalized, it's more commutative. And
are you saying the people that write more like egalitarian are just like really hot for dick?
Is the patriarchy. Well, Bell Hooks, according to a website, blackpast.org, she chooses the pseudonym Bell Hooks to write under as a tribute to her mother and her great-grandmother and to the women in her family. She decided not to capitalize her new name in order to place focus on her work rather than her stage name, and on her ideas rather than her personality. But I would argue that by changing her name and having the unusual spelling, it actually makes people talk about her name and the author much more than the ideas. Like, for example, how we're talking right now. And, you know, she also has presented and written under her government name, Gloria Jean Watkins. And so I'm a little bit confused on why, you know, she insists on using the term Bell Hooks. It's fun and it's a great name and she's a great writer. But at the same time, I don't think she accomplishes what she sets out to do, which is to remove her ego and her public persona from her ideas.
Well, you know, it's about intent. And if that's her intent, then, you know, it might not be accomplished what she wanted. But for some people, it probably does. They might view it as that, you know.
Yeah, I don't think it's really that deep, personally. Like, the people who really get all esoteric social justice-y about, like, characters, like, fonts and the linguistics and how that... I don't think this is one of those cases where a capital letter is somehow inherently a reinforcement of patriarchy or domination. So I'm just like, eh. Bell Hooks has it for her reasons, but other feminists, like, who, like, really go very far radical tend to have a different interpretation of that. So I'm just like, ugh, just chill.
But on Facebook, I don't think you can do lowercase letters for your name.
No, I don't think you can.
Oh, really?
They have to just deal with it.
Yeah.
Welcome to the real world.
Sorry.
Patriarchy.
So what do you think, talking about fighting the patriarchy, what do you think about Cynthia Nixon from Sex and the City is running for governor of New York State?
I think this is such good theater.
Well, she calls herself an unqualified lesbian. So she's, which to me, I'm like,
oh, wait, no, yeah.
All unqualified lesbians.
Yes, that was a quote of hers now. She's responding to the other quote,
which is from Christine Quinn, you know, when she was running, I think, for mayor of New York or something. And
she's a Cuomo supporter.
She's a Cuomo supporter. And she called Cynthia Nixon an unqualified lesbian who didn't support her, a quote unquote qualified lesbian, when she was running for office. So in other words, she's taking this personally because she's like, you're a lesbian, you should have supported me, and now you're running and you're unqualified. She's like, it takes more than going to protests and march and donating money to actually run an organization and be a politician. You have no experience in that, but I do. So you're not qualified and you shouldn't be running. And Cynthia Nixon, you know, has a lot of really progressive ideas apparently in her, you know, what she's proposing in her platform. And, you know, Christine Quinn, I think, is hating a bit. I just have to be real about that. Like, like. You know, I mean, celebrities have run for public office before. Shit. Ronald Reagan was an actor. Schwarzenegger was an actor. Al Franken was a comedian. I mean, come on. You have people who have gone from the entertainment world or from Hollywood to being serious public figures. And what really gets down to is there's no such thing as a career politician, but there is such a thing as being able to use skills like mm-hmm. the ones you learn in policy debate to really be able to be an active, engaged citizen and to be mm-hmm. able to rally people and organize them for change. And if that's celebrity, great. If that's a lady up the street who has three kids and she's middle class, great. If it's a billionaire, great. But you better not use your money to fuck us over. That's how I feel about it. No shade to anybody who won last night, by the way, for governor in Illinois for a primary. But that's just how I feel. Mm. You can get good in anybody.
Is it good news that Pritzker got the Democratic nomination? Because he's probably going to wind up being the next governor.
Yeah, because people hate Rahner. Oh, but God. I don't know, are people going to show up to vote? Like, millennials didn't vote. Only like 3% of eligible millennials in the city of Chicago actually vote.
Because Shangela and RuPaul and Trixie Mattel didn't
tell them to do it. Yeah. No, RuPaul's was like, that was the whole last episode. Was like, talking, get out the vote. When they did that one with, you know, with Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah. If bars want to get people to vote, they need to give people free drinks by showing up with their drink right? tickets. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're not going to be, you know, you're not really getting people
you
to
vote. You know, these people, they want change. They want to get student debt erased. They want to get health care. They want a ban on assault rifles and stuff like that. But, you know, unless you get the government to change, unless people get out there to vote, none of that's going to happen. So you're just going to be, you know, left in this perpetual state of pulling your hair out, wondering why things don't change.
And my heart goes out to those young teenagers mm-hmm. who are just starting out in their mm-hmm. political activism from the school, high school
Parkland,
in Florida,
yeah.
Parkland. Mm-hmm. And, you know, was that Gonzalez? Is the young
Emma Gonzalez,
yeah. You know, because ain't nothing worse. Another way to discourage people from getting politically involved is breaking their hearts. And aww. And how much effort and accomplishment she's gotten mm-hmm. through. And these other kids mm-hmm. as well, to just then turn around and realize that a lot of their peers that are a little bit older just didn't show mm-hmm. up to vote.
Yeah. You know what's weird, too, with like
Cynthia Nixon? Don't boo vote.
Right.
The thing that's weird about Cynthia Nixon is like, would she even be running if Kim Cattrall had said, yes, we're going to do Sex in the City 3? Yeah.
Oh, is that what
that
happened?
Ain't happening anymore?
No, so that's not going to happen. So she's just like, "What else am I going to do?" Like, well,
oh, Kim Cattrall said no to Sex in the City.
She said no to Sex in the City, and so that was Cynthia Nixon is like, "I got to do something with my life. Might as well run for governor."
Damn, does Sex in the City matter that much to Cynthia Nixon?
Well, yeah, it's a huge paycheck. I'm sure it's probably millions and millions of dollars.
We don't need another sequel. That's what I'm saying. We can do without Sex in the City 3. Mm. 2 was bad. Enough.
Oh, I love. God. I think Sex and the City 2 was so good that it needed to make a sequel. It was an incredibly bad movie. It was one of the best, worst bad movies I've ever seen.
Especially Jennifer Hudson's delivery of that line, and you gave me Louis Vuitton. I'm like, what the heck? This is the most forced, silted line delivery I've ever heard in my life.
Them going to Abu Dhabi, that was nuts.
No.
Yeah. Riding the camel. It was very Ishtar. Mm-hmm. Dustin Hoffman.
Was the guy that wrote Sex in the City 2, was he the same guy that did Ghostbusters, the Lady Ghostbusters? I have a feeling it might have been.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. There's some relationship somewhere there,
The feminist reboot of Ghostbusters that all feminists are going now. Mm-hmm. What were we thinking?
But, you know, I think it's great that Cynthia, I know she's been, you know, politically active for a number of years, and we need more women in politics. We need more queer people in politics. So, you know, I don't even know if she identifies as a lesbian. You know, her partner is a woman, but I believe she said over the years that she's dated men, too. So
she's pansexual, mm-hmm. you know,
or bisexual if she wants to buy into the binary.
She, as long as you can put it in the fry it mm-hmm. up in the pan, she's going to eat it. Mm-hmm.
And we talked about Mean Girls earlier. What's making the round is Lindsay Lohan has just done a commercial for Lawyers.com where she's like, the Lawyers.com, they called me up. And I was just like, oh, my God, I was so worried. But then they wanted me to be their spokesperson. And then I was like, oh, my God, I had all these DUIs. So, like, why not?
It's nice to see her sort of embracing a lot of her troubled past. Mm-hmm.
Well,
in
that's
a humorous
how she's
going
to bank on it, you know? So that's what she's banking on is, like, that's, you know, her reputation now. Because, you know, people, for her, it's like, nobody probably wants to insure her to make a film. You know, would people see a film and she was in it? And then it's like, is she going to show up for the recording?
She got a reputation of not showing up on set, which causes all kinds of economic problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If one thing you want to do to sabotage any job you have is don't show up.
Mm.
And, you know, in an office environment, you know, we obviously know what that causes. But when you're filming, hashtag cooking with drag queens, mm-hmm. If you want to make sure you don't get invited onto the series, is don't show up for the first filming. And we've actually had to say no to people who are really great artists mm-hmm. just because they fucking could not get here on time.
Yeah, it's sad.
And Lindsay Lohan, so, you know, in Hollywood, when that happens, they have insurance, mm-hmm. And it costs thousands, if not hundreds mm-hmm. of thousands of dollars to cover up when the major talent doesn't show up
mm-hmm.
or is ridiculously late to the set. Mm-hmm. And so as a consequence, Lindsay Lohan doesn't get cast because the insurance companies are like, we cannot cover the costs of her being involved in this production if she doesn't show up.
So you have to move on. You know, so people are still talking about the season 3 finale, the crowning of Trixie Mattel and not Shangela. Shangela did a little video because some kid watched it and was just crying because she didn't win. So she did a little video to like console him, like, baby, it's going to be all right. Don't worry. I'll be fine. You know?
And well, I want Shangela to be back on All Stars.
She'll be back on All Stars 4, I'm sure.
You know? Although, at the same time, maybe.
I just love Shangela. And I'm just like, when I heard that like Trixie won over Shangela, I'm like, in what world does Trixie went over Shangela? I'm like, come on, like, well, there's no match in terms of like style or, you know, personality. Like, I'm sorry, like, I'm not gonna diss Trixie Mattel. I think she's great, but I just have to say, like, compared to a lot of the other queens who have been on that series, she has more of the it factor, I think, and more of a potential to really reach a lot more people, just because I think she's real and more relatable in a way that the other queens seem a bit more stilted and too caught in their persona that they forget to kind of be there with people and just kind of just be real.
Mm. Well, I think, you know, with Trixie is like, and the girls who kind of put Trixie up with Kennedy, they said kind of that they wanted the person who needs it the most right now to get the crown.
Mm.
And I think with Trixie, because she has a TV show, that it's like if she didn't get the crown right now, she'd look like a damn fool. And it's just kind of like, how do you get all this hard work and then not get rewarded? Plus, I kind of feel like, you know, it's Shangela's story of being like,
The Susan Lucci.
I haven't made it. Like, she's been on 3 seasons of Drag Race now. Why not make it 4?
And you know what? And here's the thing. And this is something I think we need to start talking about. Mm-hmm. Even with like the recent trans controversy with RuPaul, and also the fact that like it's been, I don't know how many seasons of this show. And you know, RuPaul always has her judges. She always has her fans like tweeting on hashtags for stuff to participate in the show in a very small way. But ultimately, the decision is always hers. And I'm like, who died and made RuPaul the ultimate grand pooba of what makes drag drag?
Divine dying.
Exactly. And that's why I'm like, another network needs to step up and compete with Viacom and VH1 and, you know, make a show where it's audience voting style, like, you know, American Idol or The Voice, and you have queens like a Shangela or something hosting and judging, and get all these celebrity guest judges and stuff, but still make it to where the queens perform. They have those challenges, but they have to perform for a public vote if they want to save themselves.
Derek, you are talking about a revolution here, and I don't know if we're ready for that revolution.
I'm just saying, networks, if you're listening, don't steal that idea. That has been, talk to me. I mean, I have ideas for you.
Well, RuPaul was just on James Corden talking about the controversy, and she said, well, every season a lot of people are not happy, and then every season most people are very happy. So, you know, these are some thirsty-ass queens who like to complain, and that's okay. If you want to watch a rerun of Matlock, be my guest. But, you know, we have a winner. The truth is, they're all winners, James. If they're on the show, they are a winner.
I'm a winner, and you're a loser, baby.
So it is true.
Why, you know, why is RuPaul
making
hating?
More money than we are right now? So,
oh yeah. I mean, what? That's kind of how it was on American Idol. If you got on there, you didn't have to win to be successful, like J-Hud, Chris Daughtry, you know, Catherine McPhee was more successful than Taylor Hicks. And remember, was Do I Make You Proud, or the Soul Patrol, or Salt and Pepper Hair at like 30-something. Like, you remember the people who like either won and went on to be successful, or the people who had the shock elimination, but then they come out and have of like 5 Billboard number ones. You know what I mean?
Why is RuPaul hating on Andy Griffith? Matlock, the actor played Matt. People are like, what's Matlock?
Yeah, they don't know. Well, you know, RuPaul likes, you know.
I mean, it's been rerun for years, and it's gotten to the point where it's not even reaching, you know, the current generations of viewers, because that was like the greatest generation in the boomer show. Not even the boomer show, before the boomers. Like, boomers don't even care about Matlock.
If RuPaul wanted to have a show that would be a little more relevant, reruns of Golden Girls, that logo has a lot. Mm-hmm. Has a lot on their channel, that would be a better comparison. The Vixen, one of Chicago's drag queens, and you guys have seen her on Cooking with Drag Queens and plenty of times on this podcast. She has since gone on season 10, and so they showed the first 15 minutes of the show on VH1.com, and the Vixen off the bat once she's here to fight. Mm-hmm. On social media, Lucy Stuhl says she gave her those lines.
Oh, yeah?
To said, you should, when you get on that show, you just come out and come out fighting.
Hey.
And it's cute.
On, Lucy.
I like seeing Vixen, you know. Vixen's like a cute puppy. You know, it's like, she's no threat to anybody, you know? But and so it's her holding up her fists and, you know, kind of like a boxer, dressed up in this wonderful tribute to the Chicago Bulls and to the city of Chicago is endearing, I think. And then she goes on to say, I am a very influential drag queen in Chicago. And people on social media and in our community are like raising an eyebrow. And they're like, what is she talking about?
It's kind of like NeNe having that argument on The Housewives to be like, I'm cashing Trump checks now. I am very, very rich. And I heard that. I'm like, Lanithia, if you have to be on a reality TV show on Bravo and have to tell people you're very, very rich, chances are you're not very, very rich. Oprah doesn't have to tell she's very, very rich, and neither does Bill Gates. Or Beyonce, for that matter. We just know it. So you has got a little bit of new money. You feeling yourself. So you know what I mean? We have to be careful not to be too hyperbolic or about who we are and what our place is in the world. We have to think. I think we shine by just showing up and, you know, we can talk great about ourselves and admire who we are, but we don't always have to overstate what we're doing, especially when we're in progress still. I think there's this pressure to always be on and be the most successful when, you know, yes, this is a show, it's a competition, but in reality, life isn't always a competition. It really doesn't have to be, because I think in more so of a abundance mindset versus a scarcity mindset, there's something for everybody and there's a way for everybody to shine. You just have to find your something and make it work. Do you?
Gene Simmons says, why settle for the rest when you can have the best? Mm-hmm. And I think that idea that somehow in order to be loved or chosen, you have to be winning above everybody else is an immature kind of way of thinking.
I think this is what Beyonce gets at in Pretty Hurts, and it's something that I went through, and it's part of my book, Heartwork, is this idea that you have to be perfect to be loved. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she kind of saw her life, her upcoming career as, you know, a kind of a pageant where she had to be the queen and everybody else had to be on bottom for her to feel as though she was going to be able to shine and be able to have her life. And I kind of grew up feeling a similar type of way, having to be the best little boy in the world. I think there's a author of a book about that, mm-hmm, and gay upbringings and stuff. And I had that mentality because of how I was raised in a really conservative environment and how they wanted me to be and their expectations for me as a black kid wasn't, you know, gay, you know, chess loving nerd who likes tennis and track and field and debate and social issues and gender fucking. And you know what I mean? I was different. And I had to learn how to love myself and be the best Derek that I could be in order to be my most successful self. Because whenever I've watered myself down, I've done worse in life.
Mm. You know, one thing I'm really excited about is Amanda Lepore. She just dropped her new album.
Yeah. tell us about it.
It's really good. It has everything.
Everything.
Yeah, Amanda Lepore and Stefan from Saturday Night Live are pretty much the same character, you know?
With a different voice.
With about almost the same voice.
You know? Stefan's more excited, right?
That's about thing. This new album has everything. Lights, psychos, Furbies, screaming babies in Mozart wigs. you know,
I'm Too Drunk to Fuck is my favorite song.
Yeah, their tracks are hilarious.
What are they?
I'm Too Drunk to Fuck, Jean Genie. It's a cover of David Bowie.
Oh, really? She covered song. Bowie?
Yeah, why not? I have to do the best.
David saw me perform once in the Pyramid Club. No, that's she was post Pyramid Club, I think,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. God, I can't believe you don't know my history. but My Panties and Buckle Up. And the thing about her album and her work, a lot of what we do here on the show and Daphne Dumont and is inspired by Amanda Lepore's MySpace page, which was a work of art.
I wonder if she still has it.
Self-aggrandizing art.
Update my MySpace page. It's been a while.
Yeah, I need a doll. What is it that you had a doll, an inflatable doll?
No, it was like she had a Amanda Lepore duck that you could use in the bathtub. And so because Daphne is more of a plus size girl, it was a bathtub hippo.
Swimming pool hippo.
No, it was bathtub.
For an inflatable hippo.
Yeah.
Designed by Jason Wu. Yeah. I think it's fantastic.
He designed the costumes for the inflatable hippo.
And I would actually, you know, in terms of her music, it reminds me a lot of Portugal the Man's Feel It Still.
Oh, yeah. The doom doom doom.
I'm a rebel since that is it. But, you know, with a much deeper voice. And I think, you know, the first track in the album sounds great, Buckle Up, until she starts singing. But Too Drunk to Fuck, actually, because, you know, Amanda Lepore doesn't have any... I'll be blunt. She doesn't have any musicality, and she sings on the rhythm
I sing on the rhythm of the beat.
And it's kind
of
like she's singing like a school child taunting you, like, na, 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 kind of melody and rhythm. Mm-hmm. So I think it works really well in Too Drunk to Fuck, but I think it falls apart in Buckle Up.
It's also like very robotic. I mean, if you're too drunk, you're probably going to sound not as lively, or, you know, you're going to have any vocal. You're going to be like, oh yeah, I'm just here, I'm chilling, blah, blah, blah. And she's like taking that kind of slurry, speechy, monotony thing and like doing like, trying to be like, sing on the beat.
The children will eat it up.
They will.
Sure. Look, my album Lepore was inspired by my travels around the world. You know, sorry. I always enjoy performing live for my many fans, and I've been doing it for more than I can even remember. You know, Amanda Lepore talks about herself the way somebody who's kind of like lying to you or like trying to impress you know, it's just us, like, I was in need of new material that would help spread my message to fans that they should always love their beautiful, sexy, and glamorous selves. So Lepore is now available on iTunes. You can get it on Spotify or wherever you want to get music. Google Play has it too. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's made out of plastic.
Derek, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks.
And best of luck in your new endeavors. And if you don't leave town, if you just come back and visit us, okay?
Yes, girl. She's already out of the door.
Like,
she's got her Google Maps ready to go.
Folks, we can't do this podcast without your support, so if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastofun.com/plus, because your contribution to this show is what makes this show happen.
You know, I don't like wearing clothes, but when I do wear clothes, I like to put on a Feast of Fun t-shirt. You can get those at feastofun.com/store.
And if I can make a shameless plug or two, if you're in...
Not shameful, go ahead.
Plug it up.
Well, one, thanks again. I always have an amazing time. You two are funny. Y'all make me think. Aww. And y'all are just like awesome. So is a dog. And on and this like drag
what
doll with
me?
Like the big boobs.
Don't you like me?
I did. I said I like you.
Amanda Lepore.
Oh, Amanda. But two quick shameless plugs. One, if you're in Chicago, I'm going to be doing a live reading and performance at Homo Latte at Big Chicks in 2 weeks. So that's April 3rd, because it's the Tuesday after Easter Sunday, which this year falls on April Fool's Day. Ha-ha. Ooh. So that's easy to remember it. Tuesday night, 7:30, Big Shakes in Chicago, if you're in town. And then, other than that, I'm wearing this really cool hoodie here on the show today that's designed by a theater and creative friend of mine in Chicago. It's a reclamation of a lot of negative black slurs and different words have been used over time to describe black people. And it goes from the N-word at the very bottom of the black fist on the sweatshirt all the way up at the top. You see terms more like black, African-American at the very top. In gold, it says kings and queens. So it is a very captivating shirt. I'll send a picture to you all. So if anybody's interested,
we'll take a picture right now.
Take pre-orders. You know, taking pre-orders now, and they'll be on Teespring pretty soon. So Maxine Waters said it best before Donald Trump called her a stupid buffoon. She said, reclaiming my time. Mm-hmm. And I just love the idea of reclaiming, because it's like, we're already great, a lot of us. Like, in this community, we are fucking resilient. We create, we live, we love, we create spaces. We have our own culture, despite what anybody wants to tell us. And we have a history. They don't teach it in schools, but we know it in this room, and I'm sure a lot of people listen know it too. We're great, so we just have to reclaim our time, reclaim our money, reclaim our love for ourselves, our confidence, whatever we gotta do to get ourselves together. We just have to claim our space and take our power back. Mm-hmm. I think that's what this shirt is about, and it's what I'm feeling about this year. We're going to kick ass.
Can I get an amen up in here?
Amen.
Derek Clifton is our guest.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys, for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Adios.